طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح. طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and continued in his memory by a group of his colleagues. This is John Roberts. There is some good news out of Palestine this week. A small story you will not read about in the press. We spent a good bit of time over the past several months covering the story of a Palestinian hunger strike. At times it has been massive, and at times enduring, none more than the hunger strike of Samer al-Essawi. He conducted a 9-month hunger strike. Essawi is a legendary symbol of resistance. He went on hunger strike after he was released from Israeli prison in 2011, and almost immediately was rearrested and held in indefinite detention with no charges. His resistance is historic because he called attention to the thousands of prisoners who are convicted of nothing at all, are just in indefinite detention. On hunger strike for 9 months and very close to death, Essawi prevailed. He was released this week. The boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement continues to get much attention in the light of the vote of the American Studies Association to boycott Israeli academic institutions. Responses to BDS are increasingly vociferous from Israeli supporters who are beginning to realize that the movement is gaining momentum internationally and Israel is becoming a pariah state throughout the world. Palestinians may not be able to do much to stem the increase of Jewish settlement development in the West Bank or stop construction of the separation wall, but their BDS movement is rallying support around the world, and Israel and its supporters are attempting unsuccessfully to push back. They are losing the public relations battle, and they know it. Now comes an article written by Peter Beinart in Haaretz that rubs salt in the wound. As described by Phil Weiss and Mondo Weiss, Beinart puts blame squarely on the Israeli lobby for its inflexibility and says what few say openly in the United States: organized Jewish influence on the matter is losing traction for global and sociological reasons. 2014 will be the year that America's Israel debate begins to pass the organized American Jewish community by. The first reason is the end of the American-dominated peace process. Despite John Kerry's best efforts, the most likely scenario is that 2014 will be the year he fails. Kerry himself has said that if we do not succeed now, we may not get another chance. He's right. If he fails, the United States won't take another shot until it inaugurates a new president in 2017, and maybe not then. In the meantime, the Israeli-Palestinian struggle will move outside Washington as Palestinians take their case to international organizations, college campuses, religious and labor groups, and European consumers. And for the organized American Jewish community, that's a disaster, because universities, international organizations, and liberal religious groups are exactly the places the American Jewish establishment is weak. It's sadly ironic. The organized American Jewish community has spent decades building the influence in Washington, but it succeeded too well by making it too politically painful for Obama to push Netanyahu toward a two-state deal. The American Jewish establishment, along with the religious right, is making Washington irrelevant. But the decline of the American-led peace process is only one reason 2014 may spell the decline of organized American Jewish influence. The other is Iran. For two decades, AIPAC and its allies have successfully pushed a harder and harder American line against Iran's nuclear program. In Congress, where a bipartisan group of senators has just introduced a new sanctions legislation over White House objections, that hardline agenda remains popular. But in the country at large, it risks alienating the Americans who will dominate politics in the decades to come. It's no secret that young Americans are less unwaveringly pro-Israel than their elders. The American Jewish establishment won't become irrelevant anytime soon, but 2014 may be the year when the downward trajectory of its power becomes clear. Wiser American Jewish leaders, aware of the BDS movement's efforts to move the Israeli-Palestinian conflict outside of Washington, may have pushed Netanyahu to embrace the core tenets of a two-state agreement, and thus given skeptics more reason to believe Washington can still deliver. Further evidence that Israel is losing the public relations battle in the international community and is pulling back and becoming a garrison state is the story which broke New Year's Eve. Israeli Minister of Defense Moshe Ya'alon declared that former British International Development Secretary Clare Short and three other European legislators would be arrested if they tried to come to Israel due to their involvement in a European-Palestinian organization calling for an end to the Israeli siege on Gaza. The Israeli government last week outlawed the organization Council for European-Palestinian Relations, which allows the Israeli government to seize its assets and arrest any members of the organization. Clare Short is a member of the board of directors of the nonprofit group and is a British Parliament member with the Labour Party, as well as a former cabinet member in the British government. In response to Ya'alon's declaration, she said, "Given Israel's track record, the defense minister's action is not surprising, but it is yet more evidence that Israel's claim to be a democracy is eroding very fast." The Council for European-Palestinian Relations states that its aim is to promote dialogue and understanding between European, Palestinian, and Arab parliamentarians and policymakers. It seeks a resolution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict based on justice and the restoration of Palestinian rights in accordance with international humanitarian and human rights law. Although Israel has declared the organization to be a threat to its national security, it is yet to provide evidence of the group's involvement in any terrorist activity. In his statement, Ya'alon referred vaguely to the group's opposition to the Israeli siege on Gaza as the reason for its being declared illegal. This is a story of great concern for all of us who travel to Israel and the West Bank as part of our work and concern to support the Palestinians in their struggle to gain some modicum of justice. That goal can bring about our arrest and our deportation when we dare to try to enter Israel. Our feature presentation this morning is an interview with Mohammed Hamadat, one of the founders and driving forces behind the Palestinian Agricultural Relief Committees, known by the acronym PARC, P-A-R-C. I sat down with Mohammed in Cambridge as he came through town in a whirlwind tour of the fair trade cooperatives who market much of his organization's produce in this country. Park emerged from the huge voluntary movement that prevailed and characterized the scene in the Palestinian territories in the late 1970s and early 1980s. It was formed by a group of agronomists, agricultural engineers, pioneer farmers, and veterinarian doctors who were active in the voluntary movement and who were convinced that forming specialized agricultural voluntary groups would serve the farmers, the Palestinian agricultural sector, and the national goal of protecting the land in a better way. PARC was founded in 1983 in response to the lack of agricultural extension services for Palestinian farmers. This sector was intentionally ignored by the so-called Israeli Civil Administration Agricultural Department, hoping that Palestinian farmers would desert their land and thus make it an easy target for land confiscation. Therefore, PARC at that time was founded to achieve two main objectives. One, to protect Palestinian land from confiscation by the Israeli occupation. The fact that since it occupied the Palestinian territories in 1967, Israel has applied a systematic policy of confiscation of Palestinians' land in order to build Israeli Jewish settlements to the detriment of Palestinian land ownership. Exploiting the Ottoman law, Israeli occupation forces used to confiscate any Palestinian land that had not been utilized for three consecutive years. To provide Palestinian farmers who were intentionally ignored by the so-called Israeli Civil Administration Agricultural Department with the agricultural extension needed for improving the Palestinian agricultural sector. The Palestinian agricultural sector now found itself confronted with a very difficult challenge and competition with the Israeli agricultural sector, which is heavily subsidized and supported by very developed and extensive organized extension, research, and financial institutions. The restrictions on the transportation of Palestinian produce, people, and flooding of Israeli agricultural produce in Palestinian territories rendered the Palestinian competition very difficult. Now, with the advent of the Palestinian Agricultural Relief Committees, the Palestinians have a strong organization to help organize and support the production and export of their agricultural products. PARC has become the leading Palestinian NGO working in the field of rural development, environmental protection, and women empowerment. It offers technical assistance and support along with extension services to individuals and organizations working cooperatively. With that for an introduction, here is my interview with Mohammed Hamadat of the Palestine Agricultural Relief Committees. So, Mohammed, tell us about PARC, what exactly it does, what it is, what your role in it is, and perhaps what role it plays in the economy, what kind of impact it makes on the economy.
Yeah. First of all, I would like to thank you for inviting me for this interview. And you pronounced my name is Mohammed Hamidat. I'm from PARC, Palestine. And PARC means Palestinian Agricultural Relief Committees. These are the abbreviations. And this is a non-governmental organization established by a group of agronomist volunteers in 1983. In that time, the agricultural sector in Palestine, there is no Palestinian authority, there is no Ministry of Agriculture to take care with the agricultural sector. So a group of agronomists start voluntary work to give farmer training and extension and to help them how to take care with their products. And from that time, PARC start the activities and start get small funds from international organizations whom believe with the work of these volunteers and start with rural development, not only agriculture, start with rural development in the rural areas in Palestine. And nowadays, PARC is most of the biggest organization in Palestine, work in many sections and have many departments, and each department is responsible to help in sub-individual section to help the farmers or the women's society or women clubs or youth or farmer cooperatives, and also marketing for sure. As I told, PARC nowadays have many departments, like women department. To there are women, we call it women clubs or women cooperatives, distributed in the rural area, in the villages, and in these cooperatives or clubs, the women can get training, extension about their rights and how to improve their situation and how to be. To play a good role in the Palestinian society, and also get training and extension about in some projects like food processing, home gardening, and homemade things like textile or broidery or something like this, to enable them to maybe some of them open their own project and can get income from these projects.
So you help them with a startup if they have
With training, extension, and sometimes we have a project department. In the project departments, if there is available any project, so these projects goes to maybe women clubs or cooperatives, farmer cooperatives, to help.
Nice.
So there are another department which is called project departments, which get this department get make fundraising and get fund from. From outside, like Europe, states, and in these projects, it is directed projects. Some of these projects goes to home gardening or to food processing. Some of these projects goes to land reclamation or plantation, and some of these projects goes to water to collect and harvest water. In a reservoir, underground reservoir, in the field or near the houses for drinking and domestic waters. Some projects directed to farmer cooperatives to give them training and extension on quality, also to support them with some tools or some small devices to improve the quality and to of their product for sure. So this is the project department. Mm-hmm. So we have also a youth department. In the youth department, there are in most of the villages there are youth clubs, so they can meet and they can get also training and extension about political issues, economical issues, and they can take training on computer in some activities. Mm-hmm. You see, and they take some lectures in many subjects.
So. Well, here in this country, you're perhaps best known for the olive oil.
Yeah.
How does that work? How do local farmers relate to you in terms of their olives, the production, the bottling, the export? How is that organized?
Yeah. Before answering this question, I'm going to the most important department also in PARC, which is Fair Trade Department.
Fair trade.
Yeah, so the fair trade departments where I'm working as a quality control manager. So in the fair trade departments, the output of the products from the women clubs, from the farmer cooperatives, whom producing foodstuffs or whom producing agricultural products. So the fair trade department is responsible for quality control and for marketing locally and internationally these products. So to produce these products according to the Palestinian and international standards to be marketable internationally and locally. So when the for olive oil, for example, which is exported here to states and distributed. By equal exchange organization, which is a fair trade organization here. In Palestine, or in Park, in the Fair Trade Department, we believe that solidarity is important, but we believe that also the solidarity need to be supported by quality also.
Yes.
So we focus on quality. We focus a lot on quality, and we get a lot of certificates for olive oil. We have Palestinian Standard Institute certificate, which is local certificate from Palestinian Standard Institute for quality. And we have ISO 22000 certificate, which is ISO system combined with HACCP system. HACCP, which is, we call it in small word, we call it food safety system.
Mm-hmm.
So we have international food safety system, and we accredited from outside.
I see.
And we audited, accredited and audited from outside. And we have also a FLO certificate, Fair Trade Labeling Organization certificate. We have organic certificate also.
Yes.
Yeah. So we focus on these certificates to help marketing and to support the solidarity about marketing olive oil internationally. About the quality system, about the relation with the farmer cooperatives, we have in Park more than 35 to 40 farmer cooperatives distributed from south to north, and these cooperatives are independent. They have their own board, and they have election and everything, and they produce the olive oil for their members, from their members. And in Park, our mission is to encourage these farmers to collaborate in a cooperatives and to be independent. And we need to build sustainable bodies like these cooperatives to be independent, so they can sell to Park or they can sell to any trader.
Some of them actually sell to you. That is, one of the cooperatives will sell you a certain amount of oil, and that's the oil that you then bottle and sell internationally.
Our mission is to train them firstly to be independent and to be and to have ability to market their oil
right.
for Park or for any other trade.
But locally?
Yeah, this is the first thing. The cooperatives mostly export.
Oh, they export also.
Yeah, because cooperatives represent maybe a portion of the of the old Palestinian farmers.
I see. So they're exporting also. So because they're meeting all the international standards and everything else. I see. And you're helping them do that.
This exactly, because these cooperatives produce olive oil in high quality standards.
Yes.
So in Park, we support these cooperatives through the project department. We support them with pruning tools, with stainless steel tanks, with plastic boxes to collect the fruit, and support some of the cooperatives have own mills, so we support them through the project department to rehabilitate these mills to be to produce high quality oil also. So after that, we support them and train them also with small mini labs, laboratory, to analyze the main analysis like acidity and peroxide, and we train two or three members from each cooperative how to analyze it.
I see.
So they have ability.
They're doing their own inspections.
Yeah.
They
do their own inspection. They grade their oils. This tank is virgin. This tank is extra virgin. So they know. When we have orders in Park, we go to these cooperatives. Our technician goes to these cooperatives and take samples from each tank, analyze all the tanks, and after that, go to the Excel sheet and see which is rejected, which is acceptable from these tanks. And then send our truck to pump the oil with our mobile tanks, to the filling station in Aram near Ramallah. We have full automatic bottling line. We invest in a full automatic bottling line also to have very nice and very quality-wise and very nice shape of bottle
to be marketable.
To be marketable. And we do a further analysis for quality assurance that the sample is look like the same of the oil we received. And also during processing, during filling, we filtrate the oil to remove all the sediments firstly. And we have traceability system also. If you catch any bottle from our oil here in state, you can give me the lot number, which is written on the bottle. I can tell you this oil from which cooperative, at what time we receive it, at what time we filtrate it, at what time we fill it in the bottles, and all these
things. The whole traceable.
So we trace it from the cooperative to until the shelf in the market. So this is in brief about the quality system for olive oil.
Mm.
And our olive oil is marketed to states, to Japan, to Canada, to most of European countries like Italy, Belgium, France. We export it.
Wonderful.
And so, New Zealand and Sweden.
When we were there, we went to visit the cooperative that did the couscous down near Jericho. Tell us about the women. We saw a lot of women working there. They I think they were working on couscous. I think some women were sewing. But we saw a lot of very, very busy women working there.
Olive oil is one of our major products which is exported, but it is not the only.
Right.
We have couscous, handmade couscous by women cooperative in Jericho. We have, I will speak it later about it. We have dates also.
Dates, yes.
Yeah, dates, majul dates. We have almond. We have za'atar, which is spiced
thyme. Oh, the za'atar is wonderful.
Yeah, za'atar, And we have also some products marketed locally, like yogurt, honey, picklings, and and we have also olive oil soap, which is exported also outside. For couscous, regarding couscous, we have a women cooperative in Jericho, around 30-35 women working all over the year in this couscous cooperative where you was being. And this project, firstly designed for Gaza in Park before 2007, it is designed for Gaza to help the women in the refugee camps in Gaza to create job for them.
Yes.
But after the problems in Gaza and the closure of Gaza, our work stopped over there. We cannot release any quantity of couscous from Gaza. And we stay around 6 or 8 months without production. There is a shortage in the international market because they know our couscous and they like it. And they're asking us, where is the couscous? And how we should wait till Gaza open. We wait 6 or 8 months and Gaza didn't open. So we take a decision in part to train another group of women in Jericho. Jericho, because it's very closer to our headquarters in Ramallah, this is the first thing. The other thing is the nature of Jericho, which is very hot.
Yes.
So we have sun dryers over there, and it's good for couscous production because we have sun dryers there. Mm-hmm. So we start training the women and to build a quality manual for them.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a very, very good quality manual, and the couscous produced is very high quality couscous. In this project also, we arrange with farmer cooperative in Jenin to plant the wheat for the couscous.
Mm-hmm.
Because couscous is 100% wheat. Nothing. The ingredient is 100% wheat. So the farmer cooperative in Jenin plant the wheat, and we check the quality of the wheat, then grind it, and send it to the women cooperative in Jericho to have complete cycle Palestinian products. So it's a job creation and marketing for also Palestinian agricultural products, which is wheat. In Jericho, I told you they have we have around 35 women working all over the year, and they get a good income. And most of these women from refugee camps near Jericho and from Jericho city also, from Ain Sultan refugee camp, from Aqba Jabr refugee camp, and from Jericho city itself also.
I see.
So, and they are happy. The women are happy. Maybe you see them because they are busy, yeah, and they are work, and they get a good income,
yes,
from this project. So it's a job creation for them. And also couscous itself, it's cultural product. So when we export couscous to the international market, we feel that we share the people outside with our cultural food.
Yes.
So like olive oil and za'atar also. Yes. It's our traditional breakfast. Right. So in the morning, our traditional breakfast, cup of tea with olive oil and za'atar. So it's, this is cultural issue. Yes. So also couscous is the cultural cook or cultural food in Palestine.
Now tell me, what it's like to try to move the products through throughout the West Bank with the checkpoints and the military. Are there a lot of problems there, or are you able to really move things through pretty well?
You know, the situation in Palestine, it's like foggy. Well, it depends on the situation. Sometimes, yeah, you cannot move 1 or 2 kilometers. Sometimes you can move. So, or sometimes you are on the road and the checkpoint stop you, yeah, and maybe you stay few hours. Maybe ask you to return back. So the situation, it is, there are a lot of obstacles. This is internally, and but we in Park as employees and also the cooperative, the farmer cooperatives, found all the times. Try to find a solution. If this road is closed, try to go the mountain roads and to reach our destination. Mm-hmm. So it is a little bit difficult,
challenging.
Yeah.
And you,
yeah, it is challenging us to take round roads, and sometimes it's dangerous.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes it's dangerous. This is internally, and for exporting, for exportation, after the wall built, we face a big problem in exportation. Why? Because the exportation fees is doubled, completely doubled.
Doubled since the building of the wall?
More than doubled. Yeah, I will tell you how. Before, I'm with Park since 17 years, so I know the before and after. So before, the container came to our warehouse, and we fill the products inside the container completely. Now, it is not allowable for the container to come to our warehouse to be filled. We should put the products in a pallet, and the pallet should be not high. The height of the pallet should be not exceed 160 centimeter, while the container height is 230 centimeters. So we lose half of the container. This is because of security reasons. So to be scanned in the machines. And
so this is the Israeli
New regulations.
Yes.
Yeah. So the pallet is 160 centimeters. So we lose half of the container, which means that we pay double for the shipping, and we pay double for the insurance of the shipping.
Oh, yeah,
also.
Yeah.
So the cost, the fees doubled. This is one thing. Another thing, we should bring a Palestinian truck from our warehouse, which is a few kilometers to Betunia checkpoint. So a Palestinian truck to put the product on the checkpoint near Ramallah. And because of the traffic, because a lot of trucks, so we ask the driver to come one night before, and we load the products, and we pay over for the truck driver to sleep in his truck in order to be in early morning on the checkpoint.
I see.
You see? And after that, this is a few kilometers just. After that, the pallets should be downloaded, and we should pay for the forklift who download on the checkpoint, and we should pay for land also.
Okay, so you're unloading at the checkpoint. You have to unload the truck at the checkpoint?
Unload the truck on the ground. So we pay for the forklift and we pay for the land also, land
now, nation. Now, you have to fill the truck up then again to proceed beyond the checkpoint?
And after checkpoint, the product should be checked. And mm-hmm. we pay the fees for checking also.
Right.
After that, we should bring another Israeli truck, Israeli plate truck.
I see.
And the forklift also upload the products now, again, and we pay right, also for it.
Now these are checkpoints that are when the produce is going into Israel.
Yeah. It is okay. On the wall.
On the wall. So you're bringing it to the wall, unloading it. And loading it into another truck with Israeli with the yellow plates, right?
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
And then goes to the seaport. In the seaport, also download it and upload it in the container.
I see.
So we pay for all these steps. Also, it's over cost.
Yeah. Now, do you
and in quality issues also, when the truck leave our warehouse? We didn't have any quality. We didn't have any control on the product. If it is damaged, sometimes our partners here or outside. Oh, we have pallets destroyed. We have oil leakage. We have some cartons turned upside, and we don't know because we lose the control on the product.
Once it goes beyond the wall.
Yeah.
Do you? We see sometimes that do you sell to Israel? Do you sell produce? Do you sell any of these goods to Israel?
It is little bit difficult to sell to Israel because they put a lot of regulations and to get a lot of permissions from Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Health, but few products can enter.
Yeah, because we had heard sometimes that. Israelis will purchase Palestinian goods and then put their own brand on it and say, you know, produced in Israel or something, and take the identity away from where the product was really produced. Do you run into that problem at all?
I don't know about this, but one year we have a lot of excess oil.
Mm-hmm.
We produce a lot, I don't know, 2008 or 2000, I think so, something like this. We have a lot of excess olive oil, so the price goes down, and traders from inside Israel, some traders came and bought a lot of quantity of olive oil and export it outside.
Yeah.
Maybe they export it under their
under
name.
Under their own label, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. One. And now, what are you doing on this trip? What are you doing here in the United States?
I'm here in a health vacation. Mm-hmm. I was been in. I'm here in States since November 3rd. I came to Houston. I had there in Houston in Texas Orthopedic Hospital. I had total knee replacement.
Knee replacement.
Yeah, in my knee. Yeah, I had total knee replacement, complex knee.
Yeah.
And I finished the physical therapy, and our friends here in Equal Exchange, whom imported our olive oil from Palestine, invited me to meet the people and to see the people here and to see the organization and how our olive oil marketed here.
Oh, wonderful.
So
is this the first time you've been here to do that?
Yeah, this is the first time for me in States.
Uh-huh.
This is my first visit to States.
Well, that's wonderful. It's certainly and it's certainly wonderful for us to make that connection. And I'm sure for the cooperative, you know, it's important. We've had Palestinian olive oil here for years through Tanya Maxwell and her group, and we and a lot of our friends buy it by the case. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I see the people here who marketing Palestinian olive oil do a good voluntary job. And today I was being in West Massachusetts, and I see how they market the olive oil. There is a bazaar and a church, and how they sell the fair trade products, the chocolate and other things, and our olive oil, for sure, I see. And these people doing all these things voluntarily. So they did a great job.
Yeah. A great job.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. This has been very informative. I'm so glad to see you, because we had such a wonderful visit at Park in Jericho when we were there, and we love the olive oil.
Yeah.
And what we often do is sometimes here, when you go to someone's house for dinner, people will bring a bottle of wine for the dinner. We often bring a bottle of Palestinian olive oil to give to the host.
Yeah, it's a great thing, where olive oil has a lot of health benefits.
Yes.
It's an anti-carcinogenic, anti-heart disease, and have a lot of health benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, Mohammed Himadat, thank you very much, and best wishes for the rest of your trip and for healing that knee.
Yeah, thank you very much. I will be back to tomorrow morning. I will be back to Houston.
Yes.
To be checked up from my doctor, the final checkup, and then December 10,
going home?
Tuesday, my flight to Amman.
So you've been
and then to Palestine.
So you've been gone since November 3rd, and you're not going to get back till December 11th or 12th or so.
I will be in Palestine maybe December 13 or December 13 or 14 something, because it's not allowable for us to fly directly to Tel Aviv and then to Palestine. We fly to Amman, and from Amman pass the bridge to Jericho and to Palestine.
Wonderful. Mohammed, thank you very much.
Thank you to you.
That was an interview with Mohammed Himadat of the Palestinian Agricultural Relief Committees. And that is all the time we have this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a segment of Truth and Justice Radio. And please join us again next week and every week at 8 a.m. Sunday morning. You are tuned to WZBC 90.3 FM, Newton, Massachusetts. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.